Tonight, I have a title for my talk, which is The Heart of Equanimity, is the title of it. So, the heart of equanimity is something I've been practicing for decades. So, something I've been reflecting on for decades. What is it? What is it really? What is it? How does it manifest? What does it mean? All those kinds of questions. And I think tonight I might offer maybe a slightly different angle on equanimity and maybe address either some misconceptions about equanimity and also how we can make get a little bit lost on our path to equanimity. I certainly have had my opportunity in the last number of years to really evaluate what equanimity is, my own level of equanimity, and what does it mean to bring to life situations. And Brigitte also mentioned the fires, but I'll just in brief, and there's more to these stories, but I'll just say in 2018, I had cancer and surgery. In 2019, my partner had cancer and surgery. In 2020, there was the pandemic and then the fires, and there's been ongoing, of course, the pandemic's still going in various ways. Climate collapse is still going. There's social, political craziness still going. So I feel like the last number of years have been a great opportunity, you might say, to really discover the depth and meaning and possibilities of equanimity. I can't say I've reached the heights of equanimity, whatever that might mean, but it's certainly been a important and very real exploration for me. So it's an important concept, subject, topic in Buddhism. So and it's one of the Brahma Viharas. The Brahma Viharas, which is the abode of the gods, which is are the quality, I call them the qualities of the awakened heart. And it's often one people wonder, well, why is equanimity a quality of the heart? And hopefully by the end of this talk, that might be clearer to people. I'm going to sort of meander around with a couple different directions I'd like to touch on related to equanimity as my experience of it. But right now I'd actually like to hear for a minute from people here, if possible. So when I say the word equanimity, what qualities or characteristics come up for you? What do you feel? What This is a real question, and I'm looking for real answers from people. So if you have a word or a phrase or an association with the word equanimity, you can unmute and share it.
I think of resilience, getting kind of knocked off center and then being able to come back.
Great, resilience. Yeah. Anybody else?
I think of relaxation.
What?
I think of relaxation.
Relaxation. Yeah. Anybody
Even
else?
kind of
Even?
even keeled about
Even keel.
sorry, even keeled about response, yeah.
Great. Anybody else want to add something? I see centeredness in the chat there. Yeah.
I always think it's not indifference.
Yes, not indifference. I'll actually add that in myself. Yeah, great. Okay. So these give some of the associations we have, and I will unpack these a little bit as we go along here. So in my reflection on equanimity, you could think of it as in some ways, the ultimate fruition of the path. That it's the expression of the mature ripening of wisdom and compassion. That when wisdom and compassion are kind of fully expressing themselves, it will be in the form of living with equanimity. And I would say that true equanimity, or really full mature equanimity, is really a big deal. I mean, it's really a radical departure, you might say, from our ordinary, conditioned, unaware human state. It's also a human expression, but it's really something that is in its full and more complete state is not very common. However, I want to say that we all have moments of true equanimity, that we may not be aware of it, we may not always recognize it, but we have, I think, these tastes and moments and glimpses of the openness and the freedom and the ease and the acceptance and the connectedness that comes with real equanimity. And equanimity is something too that you really can't fabricate, you can't force, it's not something you can pretend to be, although you can act like you're equanimous. That's one of the pitfalls I have seen on the path in my many decades, is people get an idea of what an equanimous person might look like, and then they kind of behave that way without maybe really embodying it, really knowing what it is, or really working out of their head in terms of what someone who has equanimity looks like. I was reading from one teacher who described that sometimes students, hopefully none of you, but sometimes students will find themselves doing what's called a performance of Dharma, meaning getting an idea of what it means to be mindful or equanimous or wise or compassionate rather than actually being it. And I think equanimity is one of the things that's easy to fall into that. And to some degree, I think we all kind of sometimes do that. We're really trying, we're sincere, we really want to be free, we want to be have equanimity, we want to have presence, and so we try it out in a way that isn't always quite authentic. So what I would like to use as a related topic to actually unpack equanimity a little bit is the idea or the concept of the window of tolerance. I don't know how many people are familiar with that expression. It was created by Dan Siegel. Some of you may know who Dan Siegel is. He's a professor of psychiatry. He's a longtime practitioner. His big topic of study is awareness. He has a book called Simply Aware, and he came up with this term window of tolerance, which I think relates to the development of equanimity. So, particularly what I would call the early stages of equanimity. And the window of tolerance is considered that state we find ourselves in at times, we hope, where we can function and be effective in the world without getting dysregulated by unexpected events, by uncertainty, by the different challenges, by the ups and downs of life. So you can see that sounds kind of like equanimity. And so this window of tolerance, you know, can get bigger and smaller, and we can develop it, we can cultivate it. I was talking about self-regulation and dysregulation. And so dysregulation, you could just say, is all the patterns of suffering that we get into, all our ways of reacting, of getting lost, of getting taken over by our habits and patterns, which might be, what are examples of those? I think you could all probably give me a number of examples, but certainly like feeling totally overwhelmed by things, or shutting down, or depression, anxiety, flooded by emotions, obsessive worry, let's see, numbness, dissociation, panic, anger and irritation, and obviously the list goes on. Is anybody familiar with some of those things on the list? Those are indications when we really lose our ability to be fully present and connected to what's going on and be able to respond effectively. So when we're dysregulated, they talk about how the neocortex sort of goes offline and all these other systems are triggered. We get triggered by different things. So it's not really much, as we know, it's not really very helpful, and it's often quite painful to be in a dysregulated state. And so much of what's going on in the world and so much of what's gone on in my life recently, in the last few years, is certainly there's a possibility for being triggered into all kinds of states of dysregulation. So we need more and more to understand what it means to come back to a window of tolerance, what it means to begin to developing this deep capacity we have for equanimity. And you could say, as you look around the world, that a lot of the world is really acting out of a dysregulated state and getting more and more so. A lot of the different actions and behaviors and frightening situations are so many people being dysregulated. So ideally, with practice and maturity, we learn how to experience, be present with, stay open to, and tolerate the unpleasant and difficult experiences of being alive. And more we can stay in that way, open and present, responsive to the uncertain roller coaster of life. And more, when we lose that, when we become dysregulated, we have resources to help us come back to this so-called window of tolerance, this place where we can stay present, this place where we can be effective and responsive despite the difficulty of what's going on. So I would say in the first phase of practice, using our increasing awareness and greater mastery of our mind, of being able to focus, of the insights we've developed, of the tools of what I call tools of resilience, which include the meditation, the mindfulness, working with our breath, working with compassion. All of these are tools of resilience. We begin to experience some form of a window of tolerance and learn more and more approaches for self-regulation. And so we increase in this ability for self-regulation and stability in the face of these inevitable challenges, of these inevitable losses that we experience. And this is really looking for this in some way, might not use this language, but this is really a reason why many people come to meditation practice and they want to learn mindfulness. Mindfulness is promoted as one of the things that are helpful with this. And they hope to find it and do find to some degree. And I'm proposing that this is sort of the beginning phase of equanimity. I want to put I'm calling this a shout out to trauma, because so many people have various kinds of trauma backgrounds, and now more and more people are talking about trauma-sensitive mindfulness and trauma-sensitive practices of many kinds. So people who have a background of a lot of trauma, whether it's traditional PTSD or developmental trauma, are often the core experience is just to find a little tiny window of tolerance, a little place in their life where they can begin to feel some safety and some balance and some ease. So I'm saying this because I don't know everybody here. I don't know what your trauma background is, but I'm going to go on to say what goes beyond just the window of tolerance. But for many of us, just finding a window of tolerance is such a huge accomplishment. I have a background of trauma, and I can say earlier in my life, I had almost no window of tolerance, that everything was triggering, that it was very difficult to even go through a day with feeling some kind of ease and balance. But with a lot of practice, with a lot of body and breath work, I feel like I've established a pretty decent, shall we say, window of tolerance that I can come back to with regularity. So what I want to go on to, though, and say is that this window of tolerance is just the beginning in terms of equanimity. And don't mistake that window of tolerance for really the full expression of equanimity, because I see that happen at times, and I'll say more about that. Because often our window of tolerance is still pretty conditional, meaning it's based on having certain conditions available, and then I feel okay, and then I feel balanced, and then everything I can manage. But once I'm outside or the conditions start changing, I can't do that anymore. Equanimity itself is taking us gradually beyond any conditions. It's to find that kind of presence, ultimate presence, that is not dependent on anything being this way or that way, or how I want it or how I don't want it. But in the beginning, we work with what we have, and we have to be appreciative of the degree that we can experience this window of tolerance in our lives. And I want to use a little metaphor for this. Many years ago, I was how we can sort of create conditions that create a certain balance but are limited. So many years ago, I was traveling around the U.S. On my own, and I went to Mesa Verde National Park. And if you've ever been there, it's on a mesa, and it's up a winding road, at least when I was there, a paved but narrow road without any guardrails. And there was a real drop off, and it was kind of scary. I have a bit of a fear of heights. So I was driving alone on this road going up and up, and just this abyss off to one side as I'm driving. And what I found was what I had to do to stay in my window of tolerance, to be able to function and be effective and not freak out, was I just focused on the road ahead, just on the road right in front of me, and I wouldn't look out into the landscape and the abyss on my side. So I would just focus on that. And if I did that, I could do the drive. I could get up to the top of the park. After the fires, I found that I sort of needed to do a similar thing in my life. I needed to really just focus on what was in front of me, or focus on this or that, or else it seemed like it was too much. Else I feel like I was looking off into the abyss. And so I would focus more on just the day-to-day simple things. Now, driving up to Mesa Verde or dealing with the shock after a tremendous loss or disaster, that can be a very effective, I think, way, skillful means to manage oneself. But it's limited. It's temporary. You're doing it, you're able to do it because you're shutting some things out. Eventually, equanimity shuts nothing out. The nature of equanimity is that it allows absolutely everything. And that's the direction we're going. So in driving up the to Mesa Verde, I had to block out that abyss, that view, but it was actually a fantastic view that I missed. We miss so much by often narrowing our focus. And we have to know that sometimes it's skillful and it's necessary, but you have to know how limited it is and invite yourself to begin to expand the view over time. So what I'm saying here is a number of things is that we can use the window of tolerance, we can use our limited perception as skillful means, and we need to go beyond that. I see, you know, people, and again, I think this happens pretty commonly, live one's life by shutting down and shutting out a lot of experience. And maybe most people do that to a great degree, I'm not really sure. But you do that at a cost. And if you're on the path of awakening, you're not willing to pay that price. Because the path of awakening is about waking up to everything. It's about waking up to understanding what the greater possibility is, what greater freedom is, looking beyond the edge and the precipice that we often just block out of our experience. And so that's often what I find is this window of tolerance. People develop a pretty nice window of tolerance from their practice, and that's great. And sometimes it's, you know, a fair-sized window of tolerance, but window of tolerance then becomes a comfort zone. So this is a little bit of a challenge to not let your window of tolerance become a comfort zone that you begin to defend and limit yourself to. I see this in practice. People get more comfortable. They feel better about themselves. They have more ease. That's all good. But then they start defending themselves, protecting themselves against anything that might challenge that. And those things that challenge it are actually the juicy bits, the juicy experiences that actually begin to stretch us and open us up. And sometimes people begin to use practice itself to, they get such a sort of skillful use of mind that they can push away and actually keep away more experiences, protect themselves from unpleasant experiences, keep the mind. It's not what mindfulness is for, but I see this, I've seen this a lot too, that the skillfulness of the mind then begins to be hijacked by the old patterns of what we want to feel and see and what we don't want to feel and see, and gets almost more skillful at doing that. And then people will begin to try to avoid things that cause upset or intensity or emotions they don't want. They may even blame other people for disturbing their equanimity, which is kind of a funny thing if you think about it. And so if you notice you're feeling you have to do a lot of protecting and pushing out and so forth to protect your equanimity, I would challenge that a little bit. Yes, we need skillful means. We might need to not watch as much news as we, you know, that sets us off or whatever, create various boundaries and so forth. That can be, again, skillful and helpful. But that's not equanimity. That's just learning how to work with our triggers skillfully, which is an important thing to learn. And so defending our window of tolerance against anything that makes us uncomfortable then can turn into denial, avoidance, and many other things. Just offering this as a way to explore your own limits and your own understanding. Because often facing the reality of life, whether it's just the normal realities of illness, aging, and death, which we all learn about through our practice, or facing the current realities of climate collapse and everything else, that those pull us out of our window of tolerance often. Certainly they did me for a while. So often then people just want to ignore those things. What I'm saying here is the really exciting and dynamic place is at the edge of your window of tolerance. Getting to know your window of tolerance and explore the edge of it. You don't have to jump into the deep water, but constantly explore the edges of where you're being challenged in your window of tolerance, because that's where you can look and grow and explore and find where your heart needs to open even a little bit more. So as we practice, as our mature practice deepens, that window of tolerance begins to ideally expand and expand and expand so that more and more can be experienced with openness and presence and our heart without getting thrown off center, without getting overwhelmed, without falling into our habits of reactivity. More and more, it still may be painful, still may be strong emotions, but you're able to actually stay present and open and clear with it. That's the direction our practice is. That's the direction of opening equanimity. So we come back again and again to see where we can open and where we're still having trouble opening. It's not to force that to open, it's just to stay with that dynamic edge, to see where you're learning, to see where you're being asked to be with this too. You may all know that expression of when you have something difficult, some feeling you don't want to have, some emotion, some pain in the body, just being able to say this too. This too is part of life. This too is happening now. This too I can be present with. This too I can open my heart to. And little by little, as I said, our ability grows and grows and grows. So that eventually this window of tolerance is no longer a window. There's not even a wall. There's nothing that's separate. It kind of all dissolves into just being present in the world as it is. Being open to the world in all of its beauty and disaster. Being able to be with everything. To be able to be fully alive and present without having to shut down, without getting into reactivity, still perhaps, as I said, having very strong experiences, but being there with them. It's true and full equanimity is the end of resistance to life. Because all our suffering and all the ways we shut down and try to manipulate and fabricate and is really an expression of our resistance to being fully alive and being fully present. And equanimity is, again, that description of what it means when that drops away. So we no longer, as I said, need to manage, shut down, or control our experience anymore. We're just awake to our experience. I don't know that I have experiences of this. It's not stable or ongoing. And I don't know that I will experience that in this life. But I certainly have a sense of the capacity we have for this, of the invitation to go in this direction, of the aspiration for our awareness to take us there. In a way, equanimity is the expression of awareness. Awareness includes everything and excludes nothing. Awareness includes everything and excludes nothing. And it's truly really an expression of the heart. Often people think of equanimity as a mind thing, you know, I'm just going to stay even in a certain way and think myself through this. It really is a quality of the heart. It's a heart that's open, undefended, non-resistant, inclusive, able to be present with, deeply feeling. And because it's not resisting, it's free. This is the freedom of an awakened heart. It no longer needs to shut down and separate itself from the rest of the world. It has the capacity to feel the suffering and the beauty that is around it. And it has equanimity as its companions, has loving kindness and compassion and joy, the four Brahmaviharas. I would also say that equanimity has a kind of, I call it a kind of perspective quality, a grandmotherly or grandfatherly quality to it. Has this quality of sort of having seen it all, having been with it all, of nodding your head with compassion. Yes, you know, that. I've seen that. I know that. I can be here with that. And equanimity is not really a feeling as much as this profound capacity that we are capable of as we continue to practice and to open. So I hope that I'm expressing to some degree the potentiality of what real equanimity can be, and the potentiality of equanimity as a full expression of the liberated heart, of the heart that, as I said, can be fully present and awake and aware with whatever is going on. That, again, is an aspiration. The arc of our practice is huge, and we're somewhere around the arc. We don't know where we are, but it is the direction that we're going in little by little. So I want to end with a quote from Gil Fronsdale. All of you know Gil. Equanimity is neither a thought or a feeling. While some may think of equanimity as dry neutrality or cool aloofness, and I'm just going to say a lot of people do, Gil goes on to say, mature equanimity produces a radiance and warmth of being. A radiance and a warmth of being. The Buddha described a mind filled with equanimity as abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility, and without ill will. So please begin to embrace this journey to equanimity that has great tenderness and great care as an expression of the fully awake human being. So I'll stop there. Let's just take a moment of silence, and we're about out of time, but let's take a moment of silence.